This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Alyssa Shavinsky, CEO of Faster Than Light, a dev tools company focusing on static analysis. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So to start off, Alyssa, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. What do you want to know?
Well, anything that you feel like telling us.
All right. Let's see. I'm a startup founder. I love startups. I love making software. I actually really love testing, which brings me to what I'm doing now. Yeah, my very first job in technology was as a QA analyst. I was a professional tester. That's how I got into making software. And so I think it's actually not a huge surprise that here I am building tools around testing. And I think I also have that type of a personality. I was reflecting on this earlier today. Like, I really like getting things just right. You know, that's like a certain personality type, even if it takes constructive criticism. And static analysis, which, you know, we'll talk more what that is, but static analysis and testing is a little bit of constructive criticism on your code. So I think it says something about me as a personality type that, like, I'm totally into this.
And then can you tell me a little bit about Faster Than Light?
Yes. We are a pretty young startup. We've been around about a year. We are building developer tools for static analysis. I'm running Faster Than Light with my mentor, Brett Thomas, and with a very old friend of mine, Reuven. And what else? We've got a great intern, Kenneth, from Williams College. And we are just starting to ship our software now. So we're at this like super exciting inflection point.
What's the domain to find you?
Fasterthanlight.dev.
And you're split out across the U.S. You've got some people in San Francisco and you're in New York, but you're moving soon.
Yeah, we're all over. When I first started this company, I really wanted to work with Brett and I really wanted to work with Reuven. And they were each in their respective locations. You know, Reuven was in the middle of the country. Brett was in California, you know, with his wife and his kids. And I was in New York. So it was really straight up that we were going to be distributed. And I love that. I'm very comfortable with the idea that, you know, we're all working behind our laptops and just check in over Slack and over Zoom. And I'm moving to London. We are doing Techstars London, which starts in about a week, mid-July. And so, yeah, I'm moving out to London for it, which will be, I think, a nice adventure for me.
What is Techstars for people who haven't heard of it?
Oh, yeah. Techstars is an accelerator program, kind of similar to Y Combinator or 500 Startups. Techstars is all over the world. And one reason why I really wanted to do the London program is they are a very inclusive program. They funded a ton of women. They are a generalist program, so they're not focusing really on any particular sector. They're really more about just helping companies level up however they need to. And in my case, it seems like they're really well positioned to do a ton of customer intros, which is exactly, you know, the right thing for us, especially summer in the United States. Things tend to die down. So I'm pretty excited to go into this like hyperdrive mode where even though it's July and August, I'm going to be getting a lot done.
Let's get into the kind of the meat of the topic for tonight. What is static analysis?
Yeah, that's a good question. It is a form of testing where you scan your code, or rather a computer program scans your code and flags sections that are likely to have vulnerabilities or formatting errors. And so when you run static analysis, you end up with an output that shows you sections of code to look at for possible error messages. Now, it's important to know that when you get this, you know, printout, it doesn't mean that these are all bugs. They're just sections that have been flagged. And so static analysis gives you an indication of where in your code to look for bugs. And then you need a developer to actually go and look and say, hey, is this really an error message? Or is this just, you know, noise?
Is it looking at source code or compiled executables or intermediate languages?
You know, that's actually a good question, what the programs do. And I'd actually have to look into that. I suspect that it varies from one to the other. In terms of some of the things that I've been focusing on, it's less on actually building the static analysis programs themselves. And so I dig in a little less deeply into, like, how are the static analysis programs constructed, which actually has been like a good hack for us because it lets us build what we're doing very, very quickly. So to clarify that, and a lot of times people think that we're building the actual static analysis. The tool that we've built is a DevOps tool, and what it does is it makes existing static analysis tools a lot faster. So there's this problem, we encountered this ourselves as consultants, which is running static analysis tooling can be really time consuming and really difficult, and the configuration, the setup can be difficult, and then running it can be really slow. And we built a tool that makes that process a lot faster. And what we do is we plug in an existing open source static analysis tool into what we call the bug catcher. And that is what makes that existing open source tool run a lot faster. So for example, we've integrated with Find Bugs for Java, and we've integrated with Bandit for Python. And a lot of what I'm doing now is figuring out how do I explain to people how to understand their results. Like, you have these results from Bandit, you know, what do you do with it?
We'll come to that a little bit later.
Yes, not to skip around too much.
Yep. No, that's a problem. Why is static analysis important in the first place?
You know, a lot of people would say maybe it's not. Okay. And I would disagree. Static analysis is important because regardless of the language you're coding in, you're going to find significant vulnerabilities in your code if you don't check for bugs. There are languages like C where it's really well known and well understood that you need to run static analysis or you need to do some kind of testing. But then there are languages like Python or Perl where people just don't necessarily do that much testing. And as a result, you can end up shipping code that has a really serious vulnerability. And so if you really want to level up your code and ship the best quality code, whether you're an individual developer or just someone who doesn't want to overly burden the QA department, then static analysis is a way for you yourself to check and see, you know, is this code clean? Does this code, you know, have potentially serious security vulnerabilities that I need to fix?
You mentioned a few languages there, C, Perl, Python, I think Java. Is it available for every language? So should I be able to go out and find static analysis for C#, for F#, VB, Go, Rust, whatever is flavor of the week?
There are languages like JavaScript where it's more difficult to run static analysis, but in general, you can run tests on your code, whatever code you're writing in. In terms of what we're doing, we are actually hoping to eventually cover the whole gamut of languages. And initially, we're using open source tooling. We do think that we may eventually expand out and, you know, build static analysis for languages that don't have it yet. To give an example, earlier in the life of the company, we were in the cryptocurrency space, and we looked at EOS, which is a cryptocurrency language, and there was no available static analysis tooling for it, and we spent some energy trying to figure out how we could build this. We discovered that it didn't exist because it was a bit of a hard problem to get that done. So in some cases, you'll find a language where static analysis doesn't exist, and it could be just not enough people are using it. In the case of EOS is such a new language, and there's some challenges there. But in general, for most of the common languages, you know, you're coding in Java, you're coding in Python, you're coding in Perl, there's static analysis for that.
I hope not many listeners are coding in Perl. I feel sorry for them if they are.
No, my co-founder Brett founded this company a little over 16 years ago. And, you know, he set it all up in Perl. So, like, they're still using Perl. People are still coding in Perl.
I apologize to my Perl listeners. It was a language that never clicked for me. The usage of symbols as whatever purpose they had, I disliked it. But let me get back to what we're talking about.
That's okay. I love Python, and I'm happy to interject that whenever I can.
with static analysis, I can do it, I presume, locally on my computer.
So it depends what kind of tool you're running. With Faster Than Light, you upload your code to us, and then we run the static analysis. And there are a lot of IDEs where, you know, you'll run the static analysis in the IDE environment. So it all really depends on, you know, the tool that you're using. Are you uploading it to a third party, or are you running a program, you know, on your desktop?
What would kind of the hello world of static analysis look like? If I've got in C Sharp a little console program that prints out, you know, hello world, have a good day, how would I perform analysis on that? I'm trying to get an idea of just an introduction for beginners or someone who's never done it before. What would they do?
So for beginners, and this was me, you know, in September, I have an extensive security background. I've been making software forever. But I was new to doing static analysis, and there I was starting to do it for the first time. I set up the open source tooling, and I struggled for like a day and a half to get it configured, and then I got some help. And so as a beginner, that's one avenue, is you can find the open source tools for whatever language you're using. Maybe you're using Ruby on Rails, and you can use Sorbet by Stripe, which seems to be actually really like nicely written and easy to use and best in class. Or maybe, you know, you're like me and you're trying to, I guess I don't want to crap on some of the existing open source tools, but that's one avenue. One avenue is you spend a lot of time struggling with the setup and stuff on that, and that's kind of normal. You can pay some money to some of the service providers, and they facilitate it for you. I guess Faster Than Light is in that category. Like, we've built this tool to try and make it easier. I think the interesting part is after the setup. You know, you run the static analysis, and you have the printout, and it shows you the places in your code where there might be errors. And so the next step is to go and look at that section in your code and try and understand, you know, is this a vulnerability? Yes or no. And some of that takes just the coding experience to be able to look and understand, is this an error or is it not? And so for junior developers, it can help to pair up or to get advice. I'm volunteering myself as a resource here. And if I don't know the answer, then I'll try and get it for people. The reason why I'm doing this is I'm building this documentation about static analysis. So I want to know, you know, junior developers, where are you getting stuck? What questions do you have and where do you struggle? So I can try and answer these questions and then share it with the broader community.
Let's say we got past our analysis of my little hello world, and now I'm building something more significant, and it's going to be in a pipeline, a nice CI/CD. Is static analysis commonly part of CI/CD pipelines?
Well, it depends on the organization. I've seen surveys. I'm stuttering a bit because static analysis just isn't as common, I think, as it should be. And certainly in larger organizations, it gets siloed a bit. A big problem with static analysis is that it just takes so long to run. That's something that I think about a lot, just like how long it takes and what'll happen as that time starts to shrink. A lot of what we're doing, at least on the enterprise side, at Faster Than Light is making that process a lot faster. Like, we can take an 8-hour process and turn it into a 1-hour process. And I suspect, you know, we're not alone in that. At some point, this process will become a lot faster. And when it does, I think we'll see static analysis becoming like more ubiquitous and more widespread and like more part of the day-to-day experience, even at large companies. Right now, static analysis, in the best cases, it happens early in the process and you catch bugs early. In the worst cases, it happens a lot later on. And it's harder to fix bugs when you're finding them later on. This is one of the very first things I learned in making software, that the easiest time to find bugs is when you're whiteboarding. The hardest time to find, you know, and fix bugs is after you've shipped them. So static analysis, similarly, it's not universal where it sits in the pipeline. I want it to sit really early in, but in a lot of cases, maybe it's part of QA as opposed to part of, you know, the earlier development cycle. Does that, sure. That's such a non-answer, but.
Well, maybe I'll rephrase it. If let's say I have my CI/CD pipeline set up and I've got my unit tests, and if one of them fails, then I'll fail the build. I can also have, you know, a compiler check. If I get a warning, I can treat it as an error and fail the build. Can I have a static analysis tool look at my source code, and if there's something it doesn't like, can I have it fail the build in that case?
You're saying, you know, can it be a little more automated?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot more automated. I mean, fully automated. I check my code in, it goes through the unit tests, it goes through our compilation, unit tests, static analysis, and if any of them aren't all green, well, that's a failure, and I have to fix something.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing more automation, for sure. I think that's like one of the more interesting things that's happening now. That's not something that we're working on right now, but that's definitely something that I see in the space.
Because you did say something earlier about having to upload code to you. So that's something a lot of organizations might be hesitant to do.
Yes. So we think about this a lot. So we actually have like two different buckets. We've got the bucket where we offer something for $19.99 that's for like you and me, like individual developers. And people, you know, individual developers generally are comfortable uploading to the cloud. In a lot of my cases as a consultant, I was just given like full GitHub access. And so that's definitely something that individual developers are fine with. When you get to larger enterprises, they want things to be on-prem. And of course, you know, we're happy to do them. That's a totally different, you know, that's a totally different situation. I think you're definitely starting to see enterprises getting more comfortable uploading to cloud, but to clouds that they choose, right? So that like to Amazon or to Google or to these third parties that have undergone like a lot of certifications, and they've decided like, okay, we're going to trust like this limited set of providers. One of the things that we've talked about doing has been like something in between our SaaS tool and on-prem, where companies would upload to their AWS instance. I think it's interesting to like where you draw the line with respect to trust. But you lose a lot when you're not willing to be on cloud and when you insist on being on-prem. And I think it's interesting where the threats lie. Like that's a whole separate topic. But I think in many cases, cloud isn't necessarily a really big threat to companies. It's other things like insider threat or just not staying competitive that are the things that are more careful. But that said, I'm happy anytime companies want to install a lot of security precautions. So I'd rather see them, you know, be more cautious than not. I think as a security advocate, I may say like, I think I like, how do I say it? I'm here to champion people making good decisions on behalf of security, even if I think it's not always necessary.
But right now, if I want to use Faster Than Light, do I have to upload code to you, or do you offer something I can install as well and not expose it to you?
You're saying for like an individual developer.
But no, for my company. If I wanted to, so if I'm, let's say, using an on-site GitLab or an on-site source control, I do not want my code to go to you, but I still want to use your tools. Is there something that I can plug into my pipeline locally yet?
So not yet,
okay.
But we're actually looking at building that, you know, as we go. That's certainly on the roadmap. So if your company wanted to do that, then, you know, I'd set up a meeting with the CTO and we'd start a process that'll probably take, you know, 6 months, and we'll have it for you in like 6 months.
Gotcha. What's the advantage?
That's actually what's happening now, right?
Like, I'm sure, yeah.
Like, talk to customers, and I didn't realize this until I became more mature as an entrepreneur, that like you sell things a little ahead of where you are in terms of product. And if we can ship something in 6 months to a company that actually has a 6 month like sales cycle, like that's just fine.
You've mentioned a couple of times that your tool is faster than the ones that are, let's say, open source. How do you achieve that speed? You gave an example of it takes 8 hours with tool X, you can do it in one.
Yeah, so we can do that using Docker for parallelization, which is actually pretty new. It's a fairly recent development. Not only that Docker exists, but that Docker exists and that it's considered to be like enterprise grade. And so what we can do is run the tests in parallel. And so right now, the reason why static analysis takes so long if you have a large code base is every file has to get run consecutively. So, you know, you upload 300 files, then file one gets scanned, then file two gets scanned, then file three gets scanned, you know, 8 hours later, like, you're still sitting there babysitting the scan. Whereas with parallelization, it only takes as long as the longest scan, which is like a pretty useful innovation. We're pretty excited about it.
So, do you scale out to the demand of your customer, or do you have some huge amount of resources that you'll throw at it on a given day?
So we have a certain amount of resources through, you know, AWS. We have like all our startup programs where we get, you know, like you get like $100,000 free from AWS, actually, if you're part of an accelerator, like we were at Acela Prize. And so early startups actually can get like a lot of resources. So there's a lot that we can throw at it just with that. Yeah, I guess that answers it. Like we're prepared to throw a lot of computing at the problem even before the customer starts to pay for it.
What might I find if I've, you know, sent you my source code, I've been happy to upload it to you, and I get a result set from you of some sort?
Right.
What are the common things you find? You know, if you had an OWASP top 10, what would be your static analysis top two or three?
Yeah, I'm a fan of SQL injection. Like you can discover that you have a vulnerability to potential SQL injection, which is, you know, a really big one. I'm less of a fan of the formatting errors. I think a lot of these programs deliver a lot of information about formatting, and I'm not really sure why. I'm going to have to dig more into the history of static analysis to understand like how it came to be like this. Most of the people who I talk to just want to know, like, what are the major security vulnerabilities, or maybe there are different things that they want to know for whatever reason. But I'm finding that for the most part, like, people don't want to know about the formatting errors. They want to know, like, what are the OWASP top 10, like SQL injection as just one example.
What else would you find? So what else are, let's say, the common ones that come out of an analysis that you've been performing?
I'm actually doing research on that right now. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, like, I'm just not sure. Like, we just got these tools built and we're starting to run tests and find out. And I want people to share that with me. I'm really curious about that. Like, what are the errors that come up the most frequently? So I'm soliciting feedback. And I guess when I find out, I can let you know. Most of the time, you don't actually get so many errors in Python code. And with Java, we only got the Java tool up and running about 2 weeks ago. So we're still like really early in the life cycle of figuring this out.
Do you plan, though, to gather these statistics? Because, you know, you could anonymize them and then share them more broadly as to, you know, 80% of files we receive are fine, 20% have problems, the problems are ranked 1 through 10. Something like that would be a great contribution to the wider developer and community.
Yeah, and a lot of this information isn't widely available, right? Because I've been doing research. If it were easy to find, I would just have it. I don't know how much we're going to do in terms of aggregating and anonymizing data, because we're coming at this as privacy people. And so there's a large extent that, like, we don't want to touch some of that. You know, Brett talked about how the uploads are encrypted, and I think we're maybe erring on the side of privacy a little more than we need to at this stage. What I'd like would be for people to volunteer the information for me to find out from people writing to me and saying, like, hey, you know, I need some help understanding how I fix this vulnerability. That's really my game plan, is to do things based on feedback that people, you know, send in voluntarily. I think the balance between privacy and security is a really interesting one, because we're a security company, not a privacy company, but we're erring a little on the side of being a privacy company, and maybe it'll turn out we don't have to. Just like based on our gut right now, we're like, well, you know, who are we selling to, and like, who are our customers? A lot of them are like CISOs and security people are often privacy people. And Like we're thinking of removing mixed panel and like not using mixed panel because like privacy people don't like it. So that's been a topic of conversation at the metaphorical water cooler this week.
Once you've performed the analysis for me and you send me back some results, what do I do with them?
Ideally, you read them, you go back into your code, and you look at the code and say, like, hey, is this, you know, actually an error or is it fine? And in our consulting work, a lot of what we would do is send things back to the client and say, hey, you know, we found this, but, you know, we don't know the context for your code. Like, you have to go and look into your code and evaluate, is this an error or not? And a lot of the times the client would write back and say, like, hey, yeah, this is actually fine, and here's why. That's something that I think is really important about static analysis. It's not telling you that there's definitely a bug. It's saying that, like, this section of the code just got flagged. There's something funny about it. There's the possibility that there's an error here. Now you need to go back understanding, like, your intentions when you wrote this code and understanding, like, all of the context, or just, like, reading the code and seeing, like, the whole story of the program. You know, is this something that needs to be fixed, yes or no? So part of what I'm really interested in doing is not only finding ways to make these tools faster and easier to use, but also educating people about how to do static analysis, right? Like, when you get the printout, what do you do with that? So that's part of what's up next on my agenda, is taking, you know, Bandit and Find Bugs and figuring out, like, how do we teach people how to fix these bugs when they get them in their code.
If I've sent you, you know, 100% of my code today and you've done your analysis, I get my results, and tomorrow there's a bunch of changes. Is there a way for me to send you the deltas, or do I need to send you everything again?
That was actually one of the first things that Brett built. So you upload the code again, it like only uploads the delta, and so it's like faster. So we save your project. I mean, that's important, right? Like, you want to only check for the changes. So we save your project, and when you revisit and you're making edits, we check for like those edits and those differences.
What do you see as your next, let's say, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years?
For the next few months, it's really going to be about getting the product like into the best possible shape. And that's going to be doing more user testing and seeing like, what do people love and what do people find helpful and what features do we need to do next? There's still a lot of things that we want to build out. Like, we have for Python, we have for Java. Up next, we're also going to build for Android. And so there's just adding in more languages. But there's also things like developing GitHub integration, you know, more IDE integrations. There's some just like future parity with some of the other tools out there that we want. Being fast, like super fast, is really important, but we also want, there's a lot of things that we want to do on the roadmap. And then there's all the enterprise stuff, right? So you talked about on-prem, and we want to build out all of the respective, you know, admin features, the other features for enterprise. And on my side, I just want to talk to more customers and make sure that we're like building the right things. And there's so much going on. We're going to hopefully raise money, scale up the team, and see where this takes us. I think when you look at the difference, when you take an 8-hour process and you make it, you know, a 1-hour process, how does that change things in organizations? And what does that mean? And then what comes next after that? So I think I'm only starting to really appreciate the potential impact of what we're doing and what it can do. You know, we're in many ways still really young as a company. So a lot of what's next is just like appreciating like how impactful this could be, and then trying to make sure we've really gotten like everything exactly where it needs to be and solve the bugs. And I mean, we're still building our paywall, right? So, like, we're still really, really early. There's a lot of really basic features that we're still shipping. But at the same time, I think in some ways, like, it's okay sometimes if you're really early or your product is really MVP, if it solves a really hard problem. So for these really big companies, being able to take their, you know, massive code base and scan the whole thing in an hour, what's up next is just really wrapping my head around how useful that can be and making sure that I get in front of as many people as possible, and build out as much documentation and try and be as helpful to the community as possible.
Any final notes before we wrap up for the evening?
I think there are a number of questions where it would be helpful to direct them to the CTO. So if people want to follow up, then I'd be happy to put them in touch with Brett. And he is the Quark on Twitter.
Sorry, say that again.
Let me actually bring up, let's not have people tweeting at the CTO. You could send a message to the whole team. Everyone reads the messages that come in to help at fasterthanlight.dev. And so if you have technical follow-up questions and you want them addressed to the CTO, then you can write to help at fasterthanlight.dev, and it'll go there. And if you want just follow-ups on anything relating to static analysis, I'm building all this documentation really targeting beginners, people who are new to static analysis, and I'm happy to really hear from anyone. And also, if you're an enterprise and you want to speed up your process from 8 hours to 1 hour, then definitely please get in touch with me.
How did they get in touch with you?
Alyssa, E-L-I-S-S-A, at fasterthanlight.dev.
Well, Alyssa Shavinsky, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
If you liked this episode, you might also like episode 115 with Scott Helm on cross-site scripting and how to fight it, or episode 88 with Aaron Bedra on threat modeling, or episode 74 with Patrick Smakia on end-depend. The opening music was Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Beach Cat by D-Lay from the album Elemental.